Bye. Good morning, Grace Point. We're here. It's the early service. Yay, we're awake. Let's all stand together. Let's sing together.
We'll fall down, we'll get banged up, but the stars show how love heals us. Don't you look back, lift your head up, shake the dust off, tell me what love's made.
Something to say.
It's a brand new day. 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 When the rain falls, when the ground shakes, when the wind blows, when your heart breaks, and the sorrow. Starlight, love is ever after. I can't hear you. I can't hear you. Breath in our lungs, beat in our hearts.
Lift up your voice, you got something to say.
It's a brand new day. Feel the thunder. It's a storm, but you're not going under. It's a brand new day. 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 It's a brand new day.
We got Cassie back. That's awesome. And we have all of you here this morning. We're so glad that you're with us today. We hope you feel safe and comfortable and at home. You belong here. How you exist in the world is amazing and beautiful and wonderful. We're going to sing a song that I wrote not too long ago. Lean this way with your heart. We'll lean towards each other. And let's sing it together. This way with your heart, lean this way with your heart, we will never be apart, just lean this way with your heart, oh, lean this way. Spirits abide.
May our spirits abide. May our spirits abide. Even in the darkest night. Oh, may our spirits abide. Yes, may our spirits abide.
With me, let's sing this way.
Oh,
I love it, I love it. Sisters, brothers, and friends.
Sisters, brothers, and friends. My sisters, brothers, and friends. There is nothing love can mend. My friends. Oh, my sisters, brothers, and friends. So lean this way, lean this way with your heart. Oh, lean this way. Just lean this way with your heart. Oh, lean this way with your heart. Oh, lean this way with your heart.
Yeah, beautiful, beautiful. Thank you for singing with us. What we'd love for you to do now is meet somebody, talk to somebody, make friends, have conversations. Yeah. We love you. We will be right back.
Hello, Grace Point. Hi. My name is Emily, and I'm the Director of Operations here, and I have a couple of announcements for you. The first is very important, and that is we do have coffee now, so if you need some coffee, it's back there. If you are new here and you would like to get involved, we are about to have a lot going on in the next couple of months. So you can scan this QR code, and that is taking you to a link tree of everything I'm about to talk about. The first is that YAM, which is our social for 20, 30-somethings, meets this Thursday at 6:30, right on the other side of this wall at the Wedge. And it's a very casual, like, getting to know you situation. So again, if you're new, great opportunity for that. And then, drum roll please, I have an announcement about our next community social. Our next community social is right here in this room, and we are doing karaoke again. We are going to have food and drinks over at the Wedge. You can buy food and drinks there and bring it over here to enjoy while you are serenaded by your fellow GPers. And I'm sure it'll be very beautiful and fun. I know it'll be fun. And so that's going to be on Sunday, April 28th. It's going to be 6 to 8:30. Yes, Grace Point's goal is to create a safe, affirming, and transformative community. If you would like to support us, then you can text any dollar amount to 84321. You can go to gracepoint.net/give. Scan the QR code or Venmo us at GracePointTN. And now over to Josh for an announcement.
Good. Awesome. Who wooed? Thank you. There you go. Thank you. So how's everybody doing? Can we take a deep breath together for just a second? I don't know if you're like me, but there's a lot going on in the world. A lot of violence, a lot of war, a lot of genocide. And then even here at home, there's a lot going on with a group of people in the legislature who are trying to essentially take us way back. And one of the things I believe is true is that we can do something about all of this stuff in the world. We can work for a world of peace and justice, a world where everybody's rights are protected. We can work to that end, but we have to do it together. We can't do it alone. And I think for me, when I'm thinking about doing it alone, that's the sense of overwhelming, this is never going to change. And so we're trying to not do that alone here in this community. And one of the ways we're trying to do that is by getting people together regularly to get to know one another, to share their lives together, to share their ups and their downs and their goods and their bads. And one of the ways we're going to do that is through a thing called Connect Groups. And so can we put that QR code right back up on the screen? We have, I think, nine to 10 groups that are going to be launching next month. And so we would love for you, if you're interested in participating, belonging to a group, if you'll scan that QR code, and it's cool to do it right now. Get your phone. It's great to get your phone out, bring the camera app up. If you're like me, it'll pop that little link up. You'll try to hit it. You'll miss it the first time. You may miss it the second time. I'm vamping now to give you time so that you can scan this QR code. And when you scan it, there'll be a tab there, or a link, whatever you call it, to click for Connect Groups. And there's just a few questions. It lets us know a little bit about you, about where you live, about like pet allergies and that sort of thing, so that we can get you in the right group. So please click. You don't click that. What do you do to it? You scan it. And then you click, and then you fill it out. And feel free to do that right now. If you want to wait till the end of the gathering, that's fine. Just don't forget. And we'll be doing this over the next few weeks, so this is not the only opportunity you'll have. But we would love for you to join us, because I really do believe we can do something about what's going on in the world. But we have to do it together. And these groups will be a way for you to not only get to know people in the Grace Point community, but it'll also be a way for you to build relationships within the Grace Point community and to experience an even deeper level of belonging in the Grace Point community, which is why we're all here. Does that make sense? Doc, thanks for being here today.
Thank you, Josh. Yes. Makes a lot of sense. I love that. I think there's also power in coming together and joining our voices, singing together. There's something beautiful about that. So can we stand again once you're finished filling that out? If you want to go ahead and finish that, that's great. You can sing a song, Come to the Table. All of us have a seat at the table. No matter who we are, how we love, all of those things, we all have a seat at the table. Nobody owns the table. We don't presume to have any ownership over that table, but we do invite, we want to invite everybody to come and join and belong there. So let's sing this song together. Come all proud, come all greedy, come all liars, come all shame, come all wealthy, come receive it, to the table come today. Come all broken, come all needy, come all poor, come enslaved. Come all rulers, come be seated. Come all sinners, come all saints. Come to the table from near and far. Come from the shadows, come out of the dark. There's room at the table, we saved you a seat. Come to the banquet, come join in the feast. Every race, every nation, come all rebels, come all gay. Beloved, come to Jesus, to a table full of grace, to the table, come and stay, come to the table, come eat and drink, there's no inner circle.
Thank you. Oh, you know, you all are the real smart ones, because it's going to be a gorgeous day, and you came at 9. So you can go get your sunburn started way sooner than everybody who's going to be here at 11. Some of you tan. Well, why don't you rub it in? Some of us tan. Like, wow. We're all jealous. hey, before we jump in, I wrote a book, as you know, and then I wrote another book, as you maybe know. And it came out the Tuesday after Easter. It's right there. It's right here. If you would like a copy, I'm happy to sign it. They're $15, and you can get them right back there after the gathering, in between the gathering. I can't really do it right now. I'm kind of busy. But if you'd like one after the gathering, I'm happy to do that. So as you know, I said last week, we usually jump from series to series, and we're sort of going in a direction. One of the things that happens, especially after we did such a long series on the Gospel of Mark, is there was stuff I wanted to talk about that was popping up for me. And so in the month of April, we're just kind of do that. I'm going to talk about the things that I've been thinking about. So today I'm going to talk about something. And then next week, our founding pastor, Stan Mitchell, is going to be here. He's going to be talking about something. I'm not sure what, but he's going to do it. And then I'll be back in the last week of the month, and we'll talk about more things that I find interesting lately. Today, I want to talk about a word. I want to talk about a specific word. And the word, when I say it, it may make you break out in hives. It may make you be like, ugh, but I'm just going to say the word. Let's all take a collective moment. I want to talk about tradition. And I know for lots of us, we have a love-hate relationship. Maybe it's hate-hate, I don't know. But that word tradition feels like an ill-fitting suit for a lot of us. But I want to try today to give us a different way to think about what that word means. And before I jump into that, though, I want to kind of hear from you. I wonder, and we do this here, if this is your first time, you're not going to be put on the spot. It's sort of one of those things, if you want to share, you can share. But when you hear the word tradition, what is it that comes to mind? What's like the, if you do that word association game, tradition, something pops in your head. Does anybody want to share what they think of?
Habit.
Okay. Okay. I've got a nicotine tradition, right? Like it's it's a great way to reframe it, isn't it? That's not bad. It's a tradition.
Family.
Okay. There's a positive. What?
Food.
Yeah. Did anybody get excited specific times of the year because you're going to specific kinds of gatherings that you know will have specific kinds of food? Yeah, like when you get into late November, you know you're going to eat certain kinds of food. And for some of us, the food is not only like nourishment, but it's wrapped up in memory of the people who made it, the hands who made it, the ones you sat and enjoyed it with. Yeah. What else?
Ritual.
Okay. You have more you want to say? Okay, I thought you were like, I'm gonna say more. Ritual, yep. What's that?
Fiddler on the roof.
Fiddler on the roof? Okay. Family, yep. What else, anybody else?
History.
Y'all have a positive crowd, I love it. Yeah, so this constraint, this thing we're supposed to do, we maybe even feel compelled, like we have to do it. This thing that if you, like think about, maybe it's making a recipe, or maybe the holidays happen at this one person, maybe grandma's house every year, but then maybe you say, no, I would actually like to host everybody at my house, and then grandma and everybody else is mad because it's not exactly the same, right? Like tradition is this thing. It's almost like the rut. At times, that the rut you're supposed to stay in. Rut, okay, yeah. Dogmatic.
The way we've always done it.
The way we've sort of very similar. Dogmatic, the way we've always done it. Well, this is, I always think about that story. I don't know who came up with it, but where the mom's preparing dinner and her kid sees her cut the ends off the roast and put it in the pan. And like, why do you cut the ends off the roast and put it in the pan? Because grandma did. And finally they asked grandma, and grandma's like, well, just the pan was too small. I had to cut the ends off. And now it's a thing we all, the whole family does, and they think the only way to make a roast is to cut the ends off, when you could just get a bigger pan. Anybody else? So I did some looking around on the internet, not to brag, but I was looking for definitions of tradition. Like, how does the internet, how do these like Webster's and those sorts of places think about it? So here are a few definitions of tradition. An inherited, established, or customary pattern of thought, action, or behavior. Inherited, established, or customary pattern of thought, action, or behavior. Another one. A belief or story, or a body of beliefs or stories relating to the past that are commonly accepted as historical, though not verifiable. All right, so it's stuff primarily here that happened in the past. You can't really prove it, but people assume there's something historical about it. The handing down of information, beliefs, and customs by word of mouth or by example from one generation to another without written instruction. So this is a specific look at tradition, right? This is like the stuff, like you may say, well, somebody says something and you're like, well, that's not in the Bible. And they're like, well, but it's tradition, right? Like that's sort of the vibe on that. Cultural continuity in social attitudes, customs, and institutions. So here's what I noticed as I'm looking through all these definitions. The common thread in all these definitions seems to be that we generally see tradition as being something that tethers us to the past. All right, there's a thing that happened, and out of that thing that happened, this tradition sprung up. And what the tradition does is it ties us, tethers us, keeps us connected. In some ways, tradition may be a way of trying to bring the past into the present. Right, but it's this being tethered to a thing in the past. I mean, it's kind of hard to have a tradition for something to be traditional without some history behind it, right? Like if it was something you just did last week and you're like, well, this is tradition. Like, no, man, last week you did this for the first time. It's like when people have the first annual something. Like, can we just see how it goes? Like, what if it's awful? And like, how many annual events did you do? We just did one. That ain't annual. That's just one event. And if you think about the way because we tend to go toward the poles, right, one way or the other. If you think about the way we think about this on the poles, and how it's portrayed, if you're on more of a progressive side, tradition is the enemy of progress. Right? Tradition is the thing that's keeping us. The fact that people want to do things the way they did them back then is the thing keeping us from doing what we really need to do now. But then on the other side of that, people would say, well, progress just wants to destroy tradition. Right? That's all they're out to do. They're out to destroy the tradition. They're out to get rid of it. They're out to minimize it, to remove it. I think that's what many of our conservative traditional Christian siblings think we are doing as progressive Christians. Like, we're just out to destroy Christianity, and I keep trying to say, no, I actually quite like Jesus. I have no desire to destroy anything that has to do with Jesus. What I do have a desire to tweak a little bit, and well, let's just be honest, to completely reimagine, are ways of understanding the Jesus story. But that's not the sermon today. I want to give you two images for tradition, and I want to maybe walk through what each image does. And try to explain sort of why, Grace Point, we're embracing one of these images. So the first image, let's put that on the screen. What is that? It's an anchor. Yeah, it's a barnacled, at the bottom of the sea, anchor. When seen through this image, the image of an anchor, tradition is primarily the thing that keeps us firmly grounded in the past. So it's a past-oriented understanding of tradition. It tends to approach faith by saying, everything that needs to be said or discovered or decided upon has been said, discovered, and decided upon by our spiritual ancestors in the past. And people will date that differently. Like, well, when? Oh, well, in like the early 30s with the life of Jesus. Well, yeah, but what about, well, you know, with the apostles. Okay, but then there's also the church councils where they produce creeds, and then you have the Reformation in the 1500s, and there's all these. But for those of us today, when we are taught about tradition, it's often everything in the rear view, right? Nobody would say we're making tradition today. Often they would just say we're preserving, we're handing down, we're keeping. But tradition is something primarily past oriented. When that becomes the case, what does the goal become? The goal is just to repeat the formulas and answers of the past. right? So when somebody brings up a question, maybe this has happened to you before, where you were a curious mind and you were being told all these things, and this is how it is, and this is what it means, and this is how you read it. And something in you is going, I don't think so. That doesn't resonate with me. That doesn't sound right. There may be other ways. And, you know, what do I do? And so you don't want to just repeat the answers of the past, but people keep saying, no, 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 no. The creed says, or Luther said, or, you know, some other church father in the early church said. And everything gets grounded in. So all we are supposed to do is not come up with new things, not to make new ideas, but it's to just simply take and memorize and regurgitate what people in the past have said. Now, every decision we make has an effect on what we end up doing and being a part of. So when this anchor becomes the primary image for tradition, for what we mean by the word, it can lead to passivity, and it could lead to sort of faith, religion, whatever, Christianity, becoming a spectator sport. Right? How many of you have ever gone to, and this might be, if you're a Memphis Grizzlies fan like I am, this actually could be possible this season because they've had so many injuries. But do you ever go to a professional sporting event, like you're at an NBA game or you're at a baseball game, a football game, or whatever? Do you ever expect to get called onto the field? Like, we've had an injury, the quarterback went down, you in the stands, and then the spotlight comes on you and you start walking down and you're gearing up. That just doesn't happen, right? Because you're not there to be part of the game, the playing of the game. You're there to cheer, to encourage, to yell profanities, whatever it is you go drink $8 beer, whatever it is you do at a sporting event. That's why you're there. But nobody expects you to get involved. Nobody expects you to hit a triple. Nobody expects you to hit a three-pointer. Nobody expects you to be a part of it on the field. And when we see tradition this way, that's essentially what we're being told. Everything, all the touchdowns, all the sports ball scores have already happened. And your job now is just to read the sports almanac and find out who won. And then get a time machine and go back in time and make a ton of money. Some of us don't. That is a dated reference. It's Back to the Future for those of you who maybe didn't follow. And I spoiled part of it for you if you haven't seen it. But it's primarily about passivity. Like, we receive something, we don't participate in something. We watch something, we hear something, we regurgitate something, but we don't go into it expecting something, expecting to engage, expecting to be a part of shaping the future of the thing, right? When we talk about the future of faith, some people would say, hey, the future of faith is already decided. It's these doctrines, it's these beliefs, it's this particular way of doing it. And for some people, that's what it is. And when you have the anchor metaphor, that's what you get, I think. The anchor metaphor also leads to a lot of categories and boundaries. And look, I feel like sometimes we need to say this. There are healthy boundaries that protect you and keep you safe as a human being. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about when everything is anchored in the past, then we end up creating all these categories and boundaries that keep people who don't see the anchor the same way we do out. Right? So if you can't say this statement, if you can't affirm this creed, if you can't do what we think you should do around this particular thing, then you don't get to be a part of this. Because the anchor, and any Ray Bolts fans in the house who just want to break into the anchor holds, I've been fighting it all morning already. But this thing, this anchor, keeps us grounded in a tradition, and the tradition is in the past. And so if you don't line up with the tradition in the past, then you're out. Here's the problem. We don't live in the first century. We don't live in the fourth century. We don't live in the 16th century. We live in the 21st century. And in so many ways, much of what we have learned since then challenges some of what what our tradition was saying back then, right? I mean, Copernicus, Galileo, like people who were called heretics because they suggested maybe the earth is not at the center of everything. Maybe the sun is. And I think it was like in the 60s, 1960s, when the Catholic Church finally said, Galileo's not a heretic. He was right. Took a minute to get there. After we went to the moon, and be like, okay, yeah, I think he's right. But right, so there are things we have learned that put us at odds with some of the things. Like, I have a friend who was talking about getting one of his dad's medical books down, and from maybe the 50s or so, and looking in it and reading, and it said that women who are expecting to give birth should smoke a cigarette or two a day for the health of the baby. Medical textbook from medical school. We've learned a thing or two since that book was written. Would you agree? And can you imagine somebody saying, well, look, I get it. I know what the tests say, but let me tell you what the Bible says, the book says, the text says. It says this. And so if this is at odds with what we're learning about the world, then we got to choose the tradition, because the tradition is always right. When the anchor is your primary metaphor and you're grounded in the past, you also end up becoming defensive and protective, right? I can remember this from my days of using this being my primary metaphor, even though I wasn't aware of it. And when somebody would ask a question that was challenging or that I just didn't have the answer to, or a question that I thought if I give the answer that I think in my head, it's going to be at odds with my faith, I would get really, really frustrated and angry. Anybody else have that happen? Anybody ask a simple question, an easy question or an honest question before, and the person you were talking to just went ballistic? What is that about? Well, they're really not mad at you. They're scared to death that if they answer this in the way that maybe they're thinking, their entire faith could unravel and crumble. One of the ways the tradition anchored in the past deals with that sort of thing and becomes defensive and protective is, you know, it quotes random Bible verses completely out of context. Has that ever happened to anybody? Anybody ever done that? I'll just be honest. I've done that in the past. Just, I need to be right. I need to prove my point, and it helps if God does it for me. So let me turn to this book, and I'm going to flip through it, and I'm going to find a verse that proves I'm right and they're wrong. This way of seeing tradition also essentially says you either embrace it fully or you don't embrace it at all. This is not a cafeteria. This is not a buffet. You don't pick and choose what you want. You take it all or you don't get anything, right? Anybody ever heard that sort of metaphor to approaching it? So if you were to say like, no, I love the Jesus story. I just can't take that particular piece of it literally. Oh, nope. You either take it all or nothing, right? And in many ways, and I'm going to use a metaphor for this metaphor that I actually think in real life is a cool thing, but it's like an archaeological dig. I would love to be a part of an I have no qualifications that would allow me to ever be near an archaeological dig, but I think they're amazing. And I think uncovering things from the past, because sometimes, like with the Dead Sea Scrolls, for example, when they discovered the Dead Sea Scrolls, it transformed so much of what we as a body of people knew about the Second Temple period in which Jesus lived, right? It doesn't talk about Jesus, but it gave us insight into the way specific groups of Jewish people were engaging their faith and what they understood. And while Jesus maybe had different ideas on some of it, it at least gave us a window, right? So archaeological digs can help us understand the past better. But I don't think most people go into archaeological digs going, I'm going to find something brand new in there. Like, I'm going to uncover something that's not super old and has been buried in dirt over time. So this way of seeing it is like faith is really an archaeological dig. We're just looking for things from the past. That's the primary deal. We discover things from the past, and then we just repeat them without wondering, like, how does this land now? What do we do with this as 21st century people? Now, for a long time, I thought this was the only way to think about tradition. And so I either, you know, can embrace this, which I can't any longer, or I'm just sort of, I can't be a part of tradition. I can't be a part of something traditional. I can't be a part of something grounded in something. And I think for many of us, when I talk to lots of people who are deconstructing and shifting and they're trying to find a space maybe in a progressive Christian tradition, what they often will struggle with was like, well, it doesn't feel like we have tradition. It just feels like, are we just making this up and doing what we want because it feels good? Is that what we're doing? Are we just saying, well, that's uncomfortable. I don't like what that verse says, so I'm going to throw it out. Is that what we're doing? And then there's another metaphor that happened for me that really allowed me to realize I don't have to choose between being connected to a tradition like Christianity. I don't have to choose between that and just agreeing with all of this stuff, right? Or bailing. There's another choice. So I want to show you another image. Don't you kind of want to be on that boat? Yeah. So this is a sailboat, and the primary focus is on the sail piece of this. It's what makes it go, right? Like, you raise the sail. I don't know how it all works, but you raise the sail. I think it's pretty easy here, not to actually do it, but the physics. You raise the sail, the wind blows, and it takes you somewhere. You got to decide how to steer it, right? But it takes you somewhere. This understanding tends to see the past decisions and discoveries of our ancestors as them faithfully engaging God with their time and place, and their time and place. And it's helpful to us, not always teaching us what to think, but maybe teaching us to think, or maybe giving us invitations on ways to think, the how of thinking, but not the what. It doesn't answer all of our questions, but it helps us to learn to ask questions. There are real issues that previous generations have not faced and cannot understand because they never were given the information to understand it. And when we're dealing with an ever-evolving, ever-changing world where we're learning stuff all the time. Think about this. How many of you got to see the eclipse the other day? How many of you were just completely wowed by it? How many of you were like, eh? Okay, somebody's going to be honest about that. I was a little eh. I also forgot to get the little glasses, so I was like swapping back and forth with a stranger at the post office. No idea who the person was. She felt sorry for me because I'm like under the awning, like doing this, just trying to like squint to see if I can see it. And she's like, would you like to borrow these for a couple seconds? And I was like, oh yeah, I would love to keep my retina. So yeah, so put it on, looked at it. It's kind of interesting. The thing that I think of every time something like this happens is go back in time a long, long time ago. Long, long time ago. Imagine when early humans were just minding their own business and the sky went dark in the middle of the day and the street lamps came on and they were wondering, what in the world is happening? The gods are angry, right? And we can look back on them and think, how silly that they created these traditions around this god is dying and rising. It's not silly at all. They were wrestling with the best information they had in front of them, led them to make some meaning out of this event. I imagine it was absolutely terrifying for those early humans. And now we know when it's coming and when it's coming again and when it's going to, like, we know where the totality is going to be in 2045 or something like that. Already know. People are already booking Airbnbs so that they can be in the totality. If you own a rental property in the totality in, you know, roughly 21 years, you are going to make some money. We know more. Wouldn't it be kind of ridiculous if we had the capacity to know more, but refused because it conflicted with something that we said in the past? I hope that when I am under the care of a medical doctor, they are not thinking, well, in 586 BCE, they thought this, and I really don't want to go against the tradition. I want cutting edge, state-of-the-art medical care. I want them to know things that we don't know yet. And isn't it interesting, for example, that we would want something out of our heart surgeon, because your heart's kind of important, but when it comes to the realm of faith, lots and lots of people, not you all, lots and lots of people come to church every week, and the minute the person speaking to them diverges from what has always been told, they're like, we're out. Why? Why are we so afraid of learning something? What if learning something new opens up a whole new world? What if it opens up brand new possibility? By the way, sidebar, it wouldn't be something new to God. Like, it's not as if God, and this is not my conception of God, but play along, that if God were standing back and God sees Larry discover something new about theology and God's like, Larry, I didn't know that. Humans, we're always playing catch up. A major evangelical scholar who wrote some non-affirming stuff in the past and has one of the major textbooks on theology in that world. This week, the news broke that he had written a book with his son that he's become affirming, which is fantastic, and I celebrate it. I had a problem with a little bit of the language, because the language said, and I don't think this is probably not what they meant, but I think it should be addressed. The language said something like, God has widened God's mercy to include people of different sexualities. I'm sorry, what? God, I have been against all of this forever. You see the absurdity? Always. But you know, in my old age, I'm getting a little more liberal. I'm good with it. And then God's like, no. We're always playing catch up. God's mercy, God's grace, God's compassion, God's inclusion has always been as wide as the universe. And some of us humans are finally, in some ways, catching up to that vision of God. It doesn't mean that God has suddenly pulled a swerve, a U-turn, that God hasn't. God's not doing anything new. God, I think, is going, oh, good, I'm glad some of you are finally catching up. You still got a long way to go, but I'm glad some of you are finally catching up. How does that happen? How does a sailboat go? It's wind, right? The wind, the sail. Now, the sail catches the wind, and the wind propels the boat. I was thinking through this, and I think in Bible, and there are a couple texts that just popped in my brain as I was looking at this image. One is from John chapter 3, where Jesus is having this infamous discussion with Nicodemus, and he did it all so that people could write it on signs and hold it up at sporting events. He's like, this is going to be huge. But here's what it says. Jesus is speaking to Nicodemus, trying to explain the mystery of God and how God does God stuff in the universe. And he says this, the wind blows where it chooses, and you hear the sound of it, but you do not know where it comes from or where it goes. So it is with everyone who is born of the Spirit. Jesus essentially says, if you want to understand what it means to be born of Spirit, watch the wind. You can't see where it comes from. You can't see where it goes. You see what it's doing in the moment. That's sort of what it's like for people who are born of Spirit. Then in Acts chapter 2, on the day of Pentecost, there's this big, I think you would classify it as a hubbub, where the Spirit descends on the early Jesus followers. Suddenly a sound from heaven like the howling of a fierce wind filled the entire house. When Scripture talks about Spirit and Spirit moving, it always, because the words are interchangeable, right? Spirit, breath, Spirit, wind. These things are deeply, deeply connected. Jesus says, if you want to be born of Spirit, it's like experiencing the wind. Which means there's a role for us here in this, right? Like, imagine a sailboat on the water with the sail down and then going, why in the world are we not going anywhere? Well, because the sail, like, we have to hoist the starboard poop deck. You know what I mean? Like that's all boating terms, I know. I've watched Pirates of the Caribbean to prepare for this message, so I know. But this, we're not creating the wind, and that's a key piece of this. We aren't creating the wind. When people say, are progressive Christians just make, no, we're not creating the wind. We've simply recognized that it's blowing. And we have places we'd like to go. And so we're raising the sail to allow the wind to power us. When you think about it like this, it's not there anymore, but the boat metaphor, the sailboat metaphor, it's not passive and checked out, but it's actually active and participatory. You raise the sail, you engage, you steer the boat, but the wind makes it go. It just seems more and more expansive. Have you ever seen a sail and then it's nothing and then the wind comes and it catches it and just... It's like an impressive thing, right? That's expansive. It engages our curiosity. It invites our innovation. Because it makes the assumption that every single thing that ever could be or needs to be said about God, about humans, about what it means to be a human in the world, about what a good human life looks like, about how to create human flourishing, all the things that need to be said haven't been said yet. There are still new things that need to be said. And these new things are still being empowered by the wind of the tradition. Because we look back at our ancestors and we think, gosh, can you imagine when Luther nailed up those theses on the church door? that was a moment of catching wind. Like, hey, what we're doing is not right and it's not working. We need to change this. And even in the Reformation, they understood their motto is always reforming. And then at some point it stopped. And it's now protecting and defending what we reformed when there's still more to do. This metaphor of the sailboat, which I keep pointing to, it sees the Bible differently. The Bible is the diving board, not the swimming pool. Does that make sense? The Bible is a way to help get us in, and the swimming pool is the tradition, but God, friends, God is the ocean. And it's really important to not confuse those things. We have assumed that the Bible is the whole thing and God is maybe, you know, over here somewhere, but no, the Bible's the diving board. The tradition is the swimming pool, but there's this larger ocean called God. Why in the world would we start telling people that our swimming pool was the ocean? It's not. It may be a great swimming pool, but it's not the ocean. God is the ocean. This sailboat, this wind metaphor understands the organic nature of faith. It is living and growing. Faith should not be something we visit in a museum. It's more akin to a garden that is producing new life and being pruned and collected and planted and replanted. It's organic. It's not something that we just go look at and think, gosh, I'm so sophisticated to be looking at this. I'm in a museum. How cool am I, right? No. Faith is more like the dirt under your fingernails because you're cultivating something alive and real and something that changes over time. Are you with me? What if we use this definition of tradition? Tradition is how we interact with what is passed down to us and the contributions we make to it. What if we realize it's not our job just to pass the baton to the next group? It's our job to take the baton, do some stuff, make meaning, wrestle, and then pass all of that on to the next generation. I talk to people every day who feel like there's no part of the Christian faith for them anymore because their faith shifted and they can no longer believe the things they used to believe. And there are people actively telling them, you can't belong here. And they wonder, like, am I just going off in error? No. You know what I think is happening for some people? Some people suddenly realize that the wind is blowing around them and it has been blowing around them the whole time. That there's more to this thing than just repeating what we've heard in the past. And what my hope for us as a community is that what we do in our gatherings, in our groups, in our conversations, whatever Grace Point Church does in the world, my hope is that we are a group of people who are regularly raising the sail to catch the wind, not being afraid of where it will take us, but understanding that wherever it takes us, whatever the new thing we learn, whatever the new understanding we develop, that is not a surprise to God, but God is actually the one who's making the wind blow. Are you with me? Let's pray. God, we are grateful to be a part of something larger than just us. And at the same time, may that not become for us an excuse or a cop-out for not making our contributions. We know that there's more to be said, there's more to be learned, there's more to be discovered. May we never believe that we have somehow arrived, but may we as a community and as people regularly raise the sail to harness the wind. And may the wind take us in a direction of more and more love, compassion, generosity, peace. May the wind take us to active participation in making the world a better, more just place. We offer this in gratitude in the name of Jesus. And everybody said, amen.
Amen. I think I missed an opportunity to do Pocahontas, Colors of the Wind. That would have been perfect. But also, this song is a signature Cassie song that she used to sing a long time ago at Grace Point. It's beautiful, God's Highway. She's going to sing it for us today.
My God knows the way. And in her arms she keeps me safe. Fear not, keep
Boy, thank you so much for being with us today. We hope you leave encouraged and have a great week. We love you. We'll see you back next time. Enjoy this weather now.